Today on Radio Gorgeous, I'm welcoming back author Monique Roffey. She's an award-winning author who's been shortlisted for the Orange and Costa Fiction Award. She was a winner of the OCM Bocas Award for Caribbean Literature. She started to explore her sexuality in her 40s and now is an expert on tantric sex. But today we're talking about The Tryst, her erotic novel, which is coming out today. Hi, Monique, and welcome back onto Radio Gorgeous.
Hi, Radio Gorgeous. Thank you for having me back. I'm very happy to be here.
So I think that I've read that this book's been described as a novella, not a novel. Would you say that's true?
No, because a novella, I think, is technically, because we've researched this, actually. I think a novella is something like under 35,000 words, and this is more like close to 50. So it's a short novel.
Okay. Yeah. Yes, it's very readable. So let's set the scene. Can you tell us about the characters in the book?
Yes, it's what a playwright would call a three-hander. There are three people telling the story, weaving the narrative together. A couple, Bill and Jane, who are very much together, very much in love, and in a relationship where they have a kind of stalemate in bed. They're sexually incompatible, or they haven't really quite worked out why they're not having sex. And they tell the story of really what's going on from their different points of view. So I really wanted to have a yin-yang narrative where the woman is saying, you know, this is how we met, this is who we are, this is how I feel about him, and so is he, and he's also describing this is who we are and how we met and what happens after they meet Lila. And so Lila is the third person telling the story, and she is a change agent and a bringer of chaos, and she is a magical character who comes from a line of Lilatha. She is one of Lilith's offspring, who lives in a hinterland, and she's much mythologized. So Lila is we find her in the Zohar, in the Jewish Kabbalistic texts. But also
Was she a real person?
Well, this is why I wanted to leave that open, because Lila is really also part of Jane's imagination. So she's kind of dreamt her up. And when I started writing this book in 2002, so a long time ago, she leaked out of my imagination. And she was very much my erotic self, the sort of dark erotic, a persona. And so I dreamt Lila up. I had a dream, actually. I was in psychoanalysis for years, and I had a dream about lions once. And my shrink said, well, of course, lions are you. That's your sexuality. Mm. So somewhere in me has always been a strong, sexual, possibly even predatory female that had not manifested or realised itself until quite late in life.
Yes, until you were 40, as you said, and we'll talk about that soon. Yeah. Yes, she says that she's in a race of lovers. So you've just told me how you researched her, her values, her myths, and her sexual appetite is so big. It's like I'm envious of her sexual appetite. I want to have outpourings of like her. I want to be insatiable. I mean, I do feel like the English woman is more like Jane. We are repressed. We don't let go. We don't let our minds go there. What's wrong with us?
It's social conditioning. It's societal conditioning, and it goes back. And it goes back. I mean, Virginia Woolf talked about this woman when she wrote an essay called, I think it was Professions for Women, back in about 100 years ago. She wrote an amazing essay in which she talked about the angel in the house. And she talked about this angel that lived in her house. And it was the good angel. And it was the angel of society that was asking her to be submissive and demure and a giver and receptive and pleasing and pleasant. And she said that this angel in the house had to be killed off if she wanted to write well and write memoir. Wow. And she sort of said, you know, if you... So the angel is the mother, And if she's cooked her family a beautiful roast chicken for Sunday lunch, the angel gives the leg to the man, the breast to the children, everybody gets a portion, and she has what's left. And the angel will never serve herself first. And it's all about this this sort of... about kind of affirming a very receptive and possibly submissive and passive female nature. It's and also I think we are the caregivers, we are the homemakers, we are the vessels, we have a womb. It's in everybody's interest to keep us in check. It is a societal good thing to keep us all in check, and that's how things work.
So how do we get in touch with this, with a Lila in us?
That's a good question. I think currently a new generation of women who have access to the internet and social media are possibly the first time we have women who can liberate themselves en masse. So, for example, 10 years ago when I left a relationship that wasn't working sexually, we didn't really have the internet like we have today. So all my explorations were very higgledy-piggledy, you know, using dating sites and things that might seem very arcane today. But if a woman today, a younger woman, would like to explore BDSM or kink, all she has to do is type in, "I think I'm kinky," to the internet, and there we go, boom, up comes, you know, websites, you know, chat rooms, places to go, people to talk to. She can find a place to go to explore herself in seconds. And that's really, really radical change, a shift. I think the internet and I think social media for me is a great voice for the outsider. It's a great place for outsiders to meet. It's a great place for spirited women who have an inkling that they have a stronger sex drive than other women or any woman, really. I think the internet has given us a tool to, you know, share, like, be inclusive. Where it's so there's an oxygen, I think, today that we didn't even have 10 years ago. And of course there have been liberated women, of course there have been sexual women, of course there have been women who've written about their sexuality, of course there have been women like me throughout history. And but we've been few, you know, we are the few, we're not the many.
So you're seen as bad and you're seen as bad and fallen women, and, you know, you're meant to be ousted from society, aren't you?
Well, yes. I mean, there is this split in Judeo-Christian thinking. The good Mary, the Virgin, you know, Christ was literally born from a virgin. They didn't even have sex to create Jesus Christ. Yeah. And then there's Magdalene, you know, who was vilified and outcast. And then there's this whole idea of, you know, the Adamic story of how women were made. And the Adamic story, actually, that we have is in itself edited, because before Eve, who was made from Adam's rib, when it was Adam who came out of Eve's vagina, sorry. But we have this story of Lilith. And so the story of Lilith is
Can you tell us it?
Yes, so Jewish folklore or Jewish law, Kabbalistic law, talks about there was a wife before Eve, and she was made from dirt or dust, the same dirt or dust as Adam, but they say that her dust was impure. And the story goes that this Lilith was made, and she was good enough, except she refused to lie under Adam. She refused to be dominated by him in the sex act. And because of this, she was sort of basically a faulty prototype. And she was cast off. She was cast away into the desert. And she was such a kind of unruly whore, and she was such a difficult, spirited woman, and she was furious at being cast out, and she began to replicate herself and give birth to thousands and thousands and thousands of what you would say shedim in Jewish law, demons like herself. And so, in you know, from what I've read anyway, you know, she's a demon and she's a succubus and she's really evil and she will, you know, strangle children and basically, she, you know, and lead and suck men's sperm from them as they sleep and leave them. And she comes in the windows and she will attack your babies. And so...
What were they trying to get at? What were they trying to... Were they trying to scare people? Or was it a projection of the man's fear?
Yeah, the man sucking, the man weakening woman. The woman who for whom... So, I mean...
But why did they create this woman? Why... I'm just saying...
She was a mistake. And she has many names. Mm. I can read you some of her names.
Yeah.
She says... In my novel, she says... she tells... So when she turns up in the book... She has very pointy ears and she wears them very obviously because they're so... She's like hiding in plain sight. And she tells Jane who she is. And she says, I'm crafted from impure sediment. I am the thing that is bothering you. And I have many names. Storm, Whirlwind, Strega, Screech Owl, Child Killer, Strangler, Shedim, Queen of Windows, Throw of Orgies, Imp. And that's just part of the list. I could go on. And so this idea of the imp, the pixie, the itch, she says, I'm your very own itch. I'm your own thorn. So it's really, I mean, and so from this restlessness of female sexuality and unrealised eros, we have a whole plethora of imps and witches and sprites in all folklore, in European folklore, in, you know, right back, I'm sure across every continent has these sprites and wicked evil witches, which are kind of a manifestation of dark eros, of dark, you know, of the darkness around sexuality.
So it's actually women could have made her up as well, because it's women's unconscious, isn't it?
Yeah, very much so. I definitely think Lilith, Lila in this book, is a direct relation to Lilith. And Lilith is a story. And the story is about dark eros, about female sexuality, that if not taken in hand and not taken care of and if not tamed, it's incredibly destructive for society. Imagine if we all had integrated... I mean, the story is about Jane's integration of Lilith. And towards the end, she says, I'm a bit of both now. Imagine if we all were. Imagine if we'd all met ourselves and were able to realise ourselves sexually and were able to give everything we wanted to our sexuality. I mean, how powerful, how different the world would be.
Wouldn't it be a more dangerous place? Because there are words like child killer and, you know, strangler and, you know, destroyer.
Well, my feeling is that Lila is out of balance. She's too sexual. She's too strong. And she's one thing. And Bill and Jane are out of balance as well.
Yeah.
So Lila needs to be integrated. I definitely think women who are all sex... if we were all like that, yeah, that wouldn't be great. I'm not necessarily...
Are you saying that women are allowed to feel sexual, have orgasms and feel comfortable with their bodies? Is that what sexuality is?
Yes, of course. I mean, definitely. I mean, by the time I was 40, I feel as I knew that I had not had the sex that I thought I was going to get.
So tell us what level sexuality you're at. You know, see if we're all at the same one you were at 40.
The level of sexuality I was at, I would say, was pretty mediocre.
Okay, so you had orgasms.
Yeah, but mostly self orgasms.
Right, you couldn't get a man to make you orgasm. Yeah.
Was a bit like the. I mean, I'm not one to trash men, but I think that there's another big lie out there, which is that PIV sex, penis in vagina sex, which is the dominant mode of sexuality out there in the mainstream. There's this big idea that if you actually fuck a woman, as hard as possible or as much as possible or for as long as possible, it's bound to make her orgasm.
And it doesn't. It just makes her sore, actually.
It just hurts.
Gives you cystitis.
It hurts. It gives you cystitis and it can be quite boring, actually.
Yeah, really boring.
So I'd had a lot of that kind of sex, just like many of us have. And I'd started adding things up and saying, well, you know, obviously my vagina doesn't work.
Yeah, and mine doesn't like that either.
Yeah, because it's obviously I've got a faulty mid-vagina because up until I was 40, I'd had a lot of that kind of, you know, thrusting, dominant model of sex. Yeah. And I just thought, well, this isn't really what I had hoped for. And I've tolerated it. And it's not bad. It's not. Sometimes it can be very exciting and really enjoyable and interesting, you know, particularly if you...
Especially, I tell you when it's good, when you sort of first meet someone, when you've got that feeling of you just want to get undressed, you know, like in films, when you just want to get undressed and have sex. But then you've done that. Now what? You know.
Exactly. So I think, that kind of sex has a short shelf life.
Yeah.
So tell us
what you did.
Yeah, so, and I'd had men say to me, oh, well, my last girlfriend came like this. So there's something, you know, well, everybody else I've had sex with has loved
also,
this.
Also, as we know, women have lied through the centuries about whether they've had an orgasm
so
or
not. So is this the biggest lie on the planet?
Yeah.
That we're all colluding with this because it's been shown to us by... And we still see it. I mean, I was watching Rooney Mara and Daniel Craig have sex in the Dragon Tattoo, you know, the American version of the Dragon Tattoo film. And Rooney Mara was on top of him. And okay, maybe you can have a better orgasm when you're on top. But I was looking at it and I was going, that's a lie. That's a lie. Mm. She's not going to have an orgasm. Mm. That's fake. There's a male director here and there's even... So
well, they want the woman on top again because it's a better shot because you get the woman's back, the woman's breasts, the woman's bottom.
Yeah, yeah. But is the woman having a great time? No. Mm. And every time I see a sex scene on celluloid on film, I'm going, she's faking it. She's lying. That's a lie. And it's just so endemic, this lie, that women believe it.
Yeah.
So we believe it and we believe it and we propagate it.
We've been brainwashed.
We're brainwashed. We're indoctrinated about this PIV sex. Mm. So I had had enough of that by the time I was 40 and I was thinking, you know, obviously there's something, either I've got a faulty vagina or something seriously, something's not adding it up. And that's when, about that time, I'd been in a relationship for about 6 or 7 years and it wasn't happening, you know, and we broke up rather dramatically. And then I thought, right, I'm only 40, 41. It's really time I invest in myself, invest time. And of course, if you want to find yourself sexually, it doesn't just happen if you have a kind of vanilla heterosexual life. It doesn't just happen. You have to kind of look in all the places where there are lots of other people also exploring sex. And you have to look in the margins and you have to look in the sex positive community. And then the sex positive community is full of people who do tantra and who are conscious kinksters and who have
love
very
all the names.
Yeah. So you suddenly have to start looking in all the right places if you really want to pursue. Because initially I was pursuing it on a dating site called Craigslist, which is not a conscious place to look.
Was that a bit like Tinder then?
Actually, yes, it is a bit like Tinder. In fact, it was more innocent than Tinder and it was more rough and ready and raw than Tinder. And I can tell you that I think I was the only... I was the only woman, I bet, looking back, when you looked on Craigslist, there was a whole list of men looking for women. And these were all real men looking for women. And then there was women looking for men. And I think they were swingers, hookers and me.
Wow.
Yeah,
wow.
In those days. Wow. There were not many people like me pursuing no strings attached sex.
Yeah.
And I think that's changed massively.
It really changed. Yeah. I have quite a few friends who really don't want relationships because they've been hurt and they just they go out and they have sex with all different people and they find it really thrilling and they say they like it because they really want, but they don't even want friendship. They just want sex without any strings.
Mm. I think those women are then really well served by Tinder. Mm. And I think if that's how they really feel, then Tinder's the best thing in the world. Mm. However, I've also met other women who use Tinder who don't negotiate it very well, who are secretly still trying to find a lover and a partner. And they go and have these thrilling encounters. And then, you know, it peters out. And so Tinder isn't the right place if you're still looking for love.
No, no.
And also there's the other problem of oxytocin, which women, we give out more oxytocin than men. So it's true to say that when a man and a woman have sex, no matter how polyamorous or adjusted or open-minded the woman is and how much she wants no strings attached sex, she will have given out more oxytocin during the encounter. And she will be more bonded. So it's a love chemical that keeps families together.
Mm-hmm.
And that needs to be taken into account. We have to think that one through.
Exactly.
So something slightly different happens for women all the time when we have sex. So we have to really rethink about the whole thing. Can we have no strings attached sex in quite the same way? Psychologically, yes, for a few women. Emotionally, yes. But there's something else that happens for women that we need to think about.
Okay, let's have a reading from The Tryst.
Okay.
Would you like a bit of water before you...
Yes,
yeah.
Come up. Okay. In those post-divorce days, I was unable to get it up.
Sorry, this is Bill. We'll just let people know.
This is Bill, from Bill's point of view, talking about his life, Lila. In those post-divorce days, I was unable to get it up. I would try to coax a hard-on, but often gave up. It was as though every part of my body was depressed, including my prick. And then I met Jane. And I guess by then I was grateful for her companionship and her beauty. Quite quickly, Jane moved into the house and the house became more or less hers and mine. But I lived in my shed. I had never ever wanted to admit it, but I felt a deep feeling of dread in that house. It reeked of despair. My mother's, Jane's and mine. That was why I'd bought Choo Choo as a kitten. I needed another man about the place. I needed a companion. I continued to watch Lila, and a full-bodied lust blossomed in me, wanting to pull her close, penetrate her deeply, fuck her again, there and then across the table, bend her over, spread her legs, and lose myself inside her. But Lila tantalised, undulating just away from my grasp, her right breasts, the curve of her buttocks. She played with herself and laughed and writhed, and I knew she had tricks up her sleeve, that Lila imp. That she'd been a showgirl once, perhaps, or she'd performed sex acts on stage. I watched her wriggle her hips and thrust forward her breasts. Oh, and then she opened the fridge, and in it there was some cold, wet beetroot, and these she slipped inside herself and danced about and said, "Oh, I feel so cool inside. I had been overheating." And I was happy and I was sad, and they ate them from her cunt. And yes, it was about then that I was lost. And then she had her cock in my mouth, me up on the countertop with my jeans around my ankles. I cupped her cunt, catching the drips. Her head bobbed, and I rested one hand on her silky hair, and with my other hand I stroked her. And she was pleasuring me, and I was pleasuring her, and we were both in time with each other, my knuckles kneading her so she swelled, and then I could feel the results of her sucking. I was about to release myself, and quickly I came in spurts, all liquid gold, all over me and her, and at the same time I was kneading her soft wet cunt. She also came, fluidly, like an ocean, and a wave of warm liquid fell from her, and she shuddered and gasped, and the floor was slick with her orgasm, and she was shuddering. And she was like an animal, naked and glowing and alert. And she was also surprised. We both were. Her liquid orgasm was all over the floor. And I held her close in my arms, and her body quaked from the release. And she had opened me, and I had opened her.
Wonderful. Now, there are many, many sex scenes in this book. How did you keep on writing it with kind of keeping the original? You know how you can think, oh, here we go again. I've got to write about sex. Or was it easy for you?
I'm afraid it was really easy. The whole thing just slipped out of me. There's nothing. I never found it boring. I guess there's also I'm a magical realist and I'm a tantric woman. So the sex scenes for me are always written. I guess with a tantric woman's pen, and the magical real stuff. So, and a very female. Lila's very female. She's quite aggressive, but she's all woman. And so I guess I'm quite proud of all of this. Again, I started writing it all through my 30s and 40s. So what would I write now? I don't know, but I've just done some sex blogs, been on sex blog tour, and I find it really easy. I think if you can find the language of sex and sexuality, if you can speak about sex in a way that feels very honest, then you're onto something. And I've always been able to sort of name what I'm thinking about, what I want, what I mean. I just have a really fluid ability to write and talk about sex. It's partly being a writer and it's partly having had this journey.
I'm interested to talk about men and sex and women and sex. Has sex become more mainstream with the launch of The Amorist? But then The Amorist just say they find it quite difficult for men to open up about sex. What's the difference between women and men and sexuality and erotic writing?
Well, I think male sexuality has had such a beating, really, hasn't it? Whether it's from the feminists or whether it's from sex writers, it's a really dominant
pornography.
Pornography
must frighten them. Yeah.
So I mean, male sexuality, we all know it at its worst. We all know, you know, the porn industry is fed by the male demand, and we all know as women what it's like to be objectified. I mean, literally from the age of 10, you know, I can remember being the object of male interest and not knowing what to do with it. I mean, we don't have sex education in schools. We don't have sex education run by, councils. I mean, if I was prime minister, one of the first things I would do would be to get sex education on the school curriculum. Have young people, boys and girls, discussing sex and sexuality at a really early age. And I've got girlfriends who are mums, and their daughters are 14, 15, 16, are dealing with porn-obsessed boys in a way that I wasn't. And I was talking to a young woman recently. She was probably about 21. And I said, she said, oh, you had this, this and this when you were our age. We've got Brexit and shaved pussies. And she said that a man, a lover of hers, had refused to have oral sex with her until she shaved her yoni. And I'm like, so we're in really strange times where porn has become mainstream. And I actually think The Amorist is not a mainstream publication. It's a very niche publication. And it's actually got some fine writing. Rowan Pelling is a literary editor. So she is inviting all these amazing writers to write. It's high end, I think, and niche, the Amorist. And what is mainstream is porn at its basis level, which is sex at its basis level, the darkest level. And so how do young people, or how does anybody pick their way through this morass of female objectification?
But do you think male are being objectified now because of porn? You know what I mean?
Are men being objectified?
Because of porn, because they're thinking, I've got to be like him, as opposed to
No, it's not the same. No, I don't think men will ever be as objectified in any way. I don't think women's minds work like that. Yes, we like to look at a handsome man or an attractive man, but we don't have the same triggers. We don't have the same, we don't read things the same way.
Also, we're not so visual. Like men, they want to do it if you're looking in the mirror. They want to see your face. They want to, you know. Yeah. And yet we've got our eyes closed imagining things, haven't we?
We've got our eyes closed in bliss, yeah. I think, well, going back to male sexuality, I think men, you know, they have a. It's been shown that during rapid eye movement, we go through REM 6 or 7 times a night. We go through this cycle. where during REM we're paralysed and we're dreaming vividly. And during REM, men are aroused as well. They have a hard-on. So this is why when we all wake up in the morning, we've just come out of REM, and men are still aroused. What is one of the biggest differences between male and female sexuality is that, you know, men wake up almost every morning.
Wanting it,
yeah, aroused. Women don't.
No, we wake up thinking we've got to get up and make a cup of tea.
Go and check on the kids.
Yeah.
Go and do some yoga, meditate, whatever. Not necessarily wanting to go at it first thing in the morning. Which is already sets up a supply and demand problem, a rejection problem, a taboo problem. Let's just keep talking. Let's just keep talking about our differences. So we're not necessarily well synced up. Also, not enough men get that this PIV thing, that what women want is our clitoris is like our penis. And so we need somebody who's going to pay a lot of attention and more skill, you know, a skilled lover.
Okay, now, because you've done tantric, you've got to tell us one thing we can do with our clitorises next time we're in bed with somebody or on our own that can really get us going.
Well, my teacher said spend a couple of hours, you know, in front of a mirror and a bottle of lube and some, you know, light a candle, light some incense and, you know, bring yourself back to yourself. You
so
know,
why
you've
do you
got
think
to
looking at your own vagina.
Yeah,
is helpful?
Yeah,
why
yeah.
Is
yeah.
It
I mean,
helpful?
I've done all sorts of.
Yeah, why is it helpful looking at it?
So you can get to know what's down there. Mm. What is down there? What do you look like? Mm. And there's a French organisation, I don't know what they're called, but they're young women who are really big on the clitoris. And, you know, the clitoris is like, you know, you can't see what I'm doing, but it's
like a V.
It's not just a little nub. It's all the area around that little nub.
Mm.
It's like a big V. It's like the mound of Venus.
Okay, so the top, the hood is like the kind of top of the V, and then it goes
And then
outwards.
It goes all the way down.
Yeah.
So I would suggest also getting yourself a vibrator and... a vibrator is an amazing thing once you have a vibrator. And if you can find a lover who's prepared to use a vibrator with you, that would be the sex I was missing at 40.
Yeah.
If I had been a 25-year-old woman listening to something like this, I wish I'd gone out and bought a vibrator, explored myself with a vibrator, you know, up, in, around, and been able to say to any man who's coming my way.
Do you think there's such thing as like, because I can only orgasm from thinking about something, but can you orgasm just physically anyway? Do you know what I mean? Like out without planning it, if you know what I mean.
Of course you can. Mm. And also, one of the things that Tantra teaches is the whole chakra system and breath work. I mean, I've seen people orgasm without being touched, just learning to breathe. I mean, there's this... the fire meditation, all sorts of meditations where you start to work with your chakras. I've seen many people, men, male and women, bring themselves to like swamping, full-bodied, overwhelming orgasms themselves. Just the power of their own breath.
Wow.
Yeah.
So how can people find out about these classes? I'm sure everybody listening
Just look up Tantra on the internet. There's all sorts of people teaching all over the place. Most of them are well-known. Most of them know each other. My teacher is Jan Day. There's also a woman called You're a Light Woman. She teaches in London. They're both very good with beginners.
You did say, though, that if you're going to go, because I said I showed an interest with you, and you said, well, Josephine, you must go with your partner.
Oh, yeah, I would say that too.
Why is that?
Because you're going to go to Mars. It's like such a big impact. I would say yes, dip into it, but you'll soon realise if you have a partner, you need to bring him or her, because you're going to suddenly go to a different place sexually. It's like going to Mars for the weekend, or it's like a trip to somewhere very different. And when you come back, you can't show your partner the holiday snaps, and you can't say, darling, we did this and this and this. Or you could say, darling, can I try it on you? There's also something called Om meditation, which is all about, it's very tantric. It's I would say take your partner, sign up for an Om meditation mm-hmm. weekend or evening. Mm. A lot of women I've found who I talk about, when I first discovered Tantra, I thought, right, I'm just going to tell everybody I know. And of course, everybody will want what I've been discovering and they'll all join up. But I soon found that women are so shy, so body shy, and around other people, that was their main fear of joining a tantric group.
They might have to lie next to somebody and feel themselves in a room with other people.
They might have to expose themselves to other people, emotionally and physically, and that was sort of basically the biggest block, was that they didn't want to get naked in a room with other people. And, you know, I would say to women who worry about that, I said, you don't have to take your clothes off. You can. I mean, I'm in a group at the moment where one of the women hasn't taken her clothes off for 18 months. Wow. That's fine.
Yeah.
Go at your own pace.
Yeah.
I mean, Tantra, the root word is tan in Sanskrit. That means to expand. Okay, so it's all about expanding your awareness, becoming more conscious. Touch is a very big part of tantric love making, the idea of service, of giving and receiving, not everybody going at it hell for leather all at once.
I find that really doesn't work. You've got to do it one at a time, otherwise you can't concentrate on it.
I mean, sure, there are times when your desire is so high and mutual that you find yourself
fiddling with everybody.
Just sort of, you know, or not just that, but if you've met somebody and you fancy them so much and they you might definitely find yourself thrown together in a wild, you know, mutual hands, mouth, clothes coming off, you know, fucking all over the place, and it all being one of those things that you know,
but that is impossible to keep up, isn't it?
After those early heady days where you just want to sort of lunge at each other, that's when real lovemaking skills are called for. And I think, like I said, by the time I got to 40, not only had I not met a skillful lover, I wasn't a skillful lover. Where was my skill?
I suddenly realised the other day, maybe, you know, I'm always projecting onto my husband, and I thought, how good am I? You know, I'm really lazy. You know, I just want, you know, him to have an orgasm so I can get on with something else, and I shouldn't do that.
And I mean, I think in my memoir that I've written as well, I talk about the fact that I was very lazy. And I think if men are too, if I had to say, you know, men are unaware of the fact that penis and vagina sex doesn't really pleasure women, and they need to hear that. I would also say that we women are quite lazy.
Yeah. Definitely.
We're lazy, we want it to be done to us, and we want to be pleasured, then we get disappointed, and many of us give up, you know, there's this whole thing, men aren't good enough.
And you also just see it as an act, you just think, oh, well, I'll get it over.
I'll fake it, I'll do it. I want a man, I want a companion, I want this, but, you know, the sex act, come on, let's all talk about this and take charge of it.
Fantastic. So, how will reading The Tryst, lastly, change people's lives, Monique?
Well, hopefully, there are a lot of Janes out there.
Yeah, I'm one.
I'm one too. I mean, and I don't. I hope people don't go, oh, Monique Roffey, she's really anti-marriage, she's anti-this. It's like, no. I was Jane. I am Jay. I was Jane and Lila. But I know this story about being in a monogamous, heteronormal relationship. I know that, and it was the script that we all follow. There's a ladder, isn't there, or there's a roadmap. You go to college, go to university, find somebody to live with and have babies with, get a good job, and that's the map that will see you well from 20 to 50 if you get it all right. So of course we all try it and we all do it. And I was in that situation in my 30s where I'd got myself in the right place at the right time with a good person, and it was all happening. And the sex just, I just broke it all. And I think so, I wanted to publish this book because I've got a strong hunch there are a lot of women keeping quiet, just like I did, muddling through, suffering in silence, not talking to their friends about this, and hopefully there'll be a lot of resonance for them. And of course, Lila is metaphorical, and it's really a call for integration, sexual integration. Go and find your Lila. Go and meet Lila and invite her in. Invite her into your life.
The Tryst by Monique Roffey is published by Dodo Inc. Thank you so much for this incredible interview.
Oh, thank you. Pleasure.
And for more amazing women, go to radiogorgeous.com.
Wow.